Good to see you all this morning. Glad you are here. Good to see some visitors with us today as well. Good to see each one. Let's begin with a word of prayer this morning. Gary, would you lead us this morning as we begin? Amen. So we've spent several class periods just trying to understand a Bible pattern about the Lord's church, what its purpose was, the intention of the church, God's eternal plan for the church, Jesus being the head of the church. And so we've worked through all of those kinds of points and issues to come to where we're getting to now in this study of church history, about changes that start to come into the church. The first 400 years or so of church history and what we may come to just define or call the apostate church, that is a church that has moved away from the original design. Some of the biggest changes we see that take place is in the leadership. And what we talked about Wednesday night, and we looked at just a number of passages that would point to the fact that God foretold of a falling away. The apostles, you know, that they pointed to the fact that there would be a falling away. And in particular, there were some things that Paul said to the elders from Ephesus that even from among them. This, I think, was a significant point. That even from the leadership of the church, each local church to be having elders, that there would be a falling away. And as we see, as we get on to the story where we're going today, we see that, in fact, yeah, that's where some of the first digressions start to take place. And so there was the warning of the falling away from truth. And if we're kind of following along roughly in a workbook, page 19, and today, kind of coming into this point of some study, and I'll have some of this on the overhead too if you don't have a workbook, just the New Testament pattern of church government, so to speak, or the hierarchy of the church is what some have said in the secular times or secular world. And in a simple way, what we notice when we look at just a few passages today is that the church has leadership within each local congregation. There are elders, there are deacons, and we see the saints. Someone said one time, well, there are elders and there are deacons and there are those who are Christians. Well, elders and deacons are Christians too. And or would be saints as well. Not any different in that regard, just that they hold particular responsibilities or offices within that the local church. Looking at a few passages here, let's go to Acts chapter 14. Acts chapter 14. Now, we're coming into this study today, and again, just keeping in mind that there has been the foretelling of the falling away. And the falling away that would even come from the leadership of the church. We're backing up in our thoughts now just to go back to what did God specify? What was the pattern of the church? In Acts chapter 14, verse 23, and when they had appointed elders in every church and prayed with fasting, they commended them to the Lord in whom they believed. Talking about Paul, as he was on, I believe this was his second missionary journey, and going back to some of the churches where they had already established, where they had been, going back now, setting up the leadership that would be needed in these churches. In chapter 15, not necessarily going to read from here, but just in chapter 15, we see some signals of the church of Jerusalem, that the fact that they had elders, that had been appointed there. Chapter 20, moving a little farther, chapter 20. Verse 17, the church had at Ephesus had elders. Verse 17 says, from Miletus, he sent, as Paul sent to Ephesus and called for the elders of the church. I know this seems like a simple point, but, you know, each church was to have elders. When Paul called for the elders from Ephesus, he wasn't talking or calling the elders from any other church. He was speaking to that church in particular there. The warnings that he gave that we've read a couple of times, verse 28 and following, you know, as to what the elders were to do to shepherd the church of God, which is among you, again, kind of emphasizes the responsibility they had and how far the responsibility went. It went no farther than the church that they were shepherds over, shepherds or overseers. And looking to 1 Timothy chapter 3, I want to spend just a few minutes in a couple of texts that talk about some of the qualifications of those who would serve in this role that has been introduced. The study here is not intended to be a deep study or deep dive into elders or the eldership or the qualifications, but it is important for us to kind of have a good understanding of an overview of who are the men who would serve as elders, what is their responsibility, what is their qualifications, because we don't get very far into church history where we find these qualifications are breached, where they are not being followed. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 1. And this is a true saying. If a man desires the position of a bishop, he desires a good work. A bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife, temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable, able to teach, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not covetous, one who rules his own house well, having his children in submission with all reverence. For if a man does not know how to rule his own house, how will he take care of the church of God? Not a novice, lest being puffed up with pride, he fall into the same condemnation as the devil. Moreover, he must have a good testimony among those who are outsiders, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. All right, a lot of time could be spent just talking about these qualifications. What do they entail? You know, how does this describe the character of a man who would serve this way? And again, this is not really the focus of the class. But we do have to have these things on our mind, because there are some things that stand out to me in this text that really is going to fly in the face, so to speak, of what happens with regard to bishops or elders in just another century or so after they were first established. Titus chapter 1, let's read again. Titus chapter 1, and we'll begin at verse 5. For this reason I left you in Crete, that you should set in order the things that are lacking, and appoint elders in every city as I have commanded you. If a man is blameless, the husband of one wife, having faithful children, not accused of dissipation or insubordination. For a bishop must be blameless, a steward of God, not self-willed, not quick-tempered, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but hospitable, a lover of what is good, sober-minded, just, holy, self-controlled, holding fast the faithful word as he has been taught, that he may be able by sound doctrine both to exhort and to convict those who contradict. For there are many insubordinate, both idle talkers and deceivers, especially those of the circumcision, whose mouths must be stopped, who subvert whole households, teaching things which they ought not for the sake of dishonest gain. All right, let's take a few minutes here and just make some observations about some things that we see in these two texts about the elders, their role, overview of qualifications, their purpose. What was God's plan for a church to have elders? Why was that God's plan? What do we see? What stands out to you? Yes.
Discipline, and he's able to teach. He must teach sound doctrine to the point where he can recognize and refute those who are teaching something contrary. So you're right, it's a very important role that, that God has designated for these bishops and elders. And you can't emphasize enough how important that is to, like we said, you know, if you want to change the course of something, you go to the leadership, you go to the head, and that changes it. And so I think that these qualifications, these characteristics that these men are to have, again, to have a good reputation outside the congregation, outside the church also, in the world. So it's a person to me that's very self-controlled, very disciplined.
So we're seeing a distinction between a man who is qualified in such ways to do this and someone, as one of these texts would read, is not a novice. You know, because there are those who are Christians, perhaps sincere in many ways, faithful to the Lord, but still a novice in understanding and truth. And so we're seeing some distinctions there for the purposes, even as Vince is. Yeah.
I think the apostasy that you're talking about there, personally, I look at this and think it says, blameless as God's steward, not self-willed. Many people think the leader is to take charge, let's go. Mm-hmm. And actually, I believe the teaching here is that an elder is take charge, let's follow. Mm-hmm. Not self-willed, doing what they want to do, but understanding I'm not a leader making decisions of where we're going to go. That's already been decided. I'm a leader to make sure we're going the way we're supposed to be, already been determined for us to go.
In a good way of saying that. An elder has a position of leadership, but that leadership is subservient to following Christ. And hopefully, I mean, these qualifications would indicate that that's already been proven, you know, that here is one who is following Christ. That's an interesting way of saying that, Neil, and I think that makes a really good point. You know, a leader, but is still a follower, you know, with the purpose and intent of those who are that there are others who would be willing to follow that example.
They're not elders are supposed to be trailblazers.
That's already been done.
Trail followers.
That's a good point.
It looks like, from what I read here, they're also supposed to be strong enough and educated enough in the Bible to protect the congregation from forces within and without who may strive to cause problems within the congregation.
Absolutely. I think this becomes one of the most powerful points about the need of elders in a church is hopefully maturity of mind and faith to be able to see issues, individuals that would stir up and cause problems. I mean, even to be able to go to members of the church who are battling with some issues outside. And to say, look, we're seeing that there's some issues, that you're battling with some issues. Hopefully would have the wisdom to be able to see and identify some things. Yeah, good thoughts. Hey.
Well, even in the workplace, that kind of logic is needful because you've got to have leaders in the workplace because you can't just turn somebody with very little experience on a $75,000 machine to somebody
right. Rich. You know, what's interesting to me, I mean, we can all get that analogy. We understand that. We would understand that same kind of analogy in the workplace or in the school, even in the home, community. And yet, many, many churches are very content to not have elders. You know, to make decisions by, you know, joint council or business meetings or whatever. And I understand that you can't have elders if you don't have men who are qualified and willing to serve that way. But sometimes what is the secondary means of a church functioning, leadership just from the men, becomes the norm as opposed to what God commanded, what God wanted. I mean, it's interesting when you think about, you know, Acts chapter 14, verse 23. you know, that they went to every city, appointing elders. That Paul said to Titus, you can't miss this now. I left you in Crete that you should set in order the things that are lacking and appoint elders in every city as I've commanded you. We can never come to a point of believing that a church is complete and fully satisfying before God when there are not elders that are shepherding the church. And I'm afraid I've seen this in a number of places, you know, that where I've gone, where many churches do not have elders. And I've heard sometimes brethren say some things that give me the impression that they are quite content with that arrangement. God is not content with that arrangement, because that's not God's plan.
Saints' plan to take out leadership.
Absolutely.
Make it temptations, hardships, poor decisions at young age, all of those get in the way of something that needs to be prepared for a long time.
Sure.
And that's where in many cases it makes it difficult to find people who are qualified because
sure.
of the successes that Satan has had in the past.
Absolutely. And we talked about that some Wednesday night. Just, you know, I'm convinced as well, this is part of Satan's plan. If you can destroy the leadership of the church is at best in a tenuous situation. And you take out the leadership of the church.
And this attack is not the leadership. This is attack. It attacks the future leadership.
This is true, too. Oh, yeah, that's right. The far-reaching consequences of that. Absolutely.
Been in Church of Christ that had no elders because they find no one involved. Now, in that case, what is there to do?
Well,
the large churches do.
I know this is a sad thing. I mean, it's sometimes you almost can understand in smaller churches that there's, can you say this, less of a pool, so to speak, of men that might be qualified. But it's getting to be more and more common where you have a church of 70, 80, 100, 125 people or more, and there's no men qualified. I mean, this is hard to understand. And there's a lot of factors in that, okay? You know, Neil's point here, I think, is pertinent in that Satan's been effective, you know, at destroying some of the basic elements of what builds an eldership, which is families are not what families used to be, and there are so many distractions in life that take men away from preparing themselves, you know, for the roles of elders. And we've come to a point in so many churches now where there are not men who are qualified. And sometimes I hear a lot of excuses made for that, but I think we better back up on that. I don't think there are excuses that can be made. Now, there's some realities that can be stated sometimes. But there's not excuses. There are thoughts here.
I was talking back in July on one of my trips with Rob Spear, who's an elder and a preacher up in Kentucky. And he made a really good point to me that I had already thought about it somewhat. He pointed out, and he said he was old when he was younger. How many young men do you hear who are saying they want to be a preacher? That's their goal, they want to be a preacher. And how many, you almost never hear a young man saying, I want to be an elder. We aren't, and in general it seems, as Christians, we aren't focusing on raising elders.
Mm-hmm.
We're raising preachers much more often than we're focusing on, like me and Tristan at our age, focusing on becoming eldership material one day.
I think I've observed the same thing. I've seen the same thing. It's not so uncommon for a young man at some point to say, you know, I really want to preach. I want to look for opportunities. I want to be a preacher. You know, and that's and commendable. That's wonderful. That's great. But I think about it, I don't need more than two or three fingers for me to count up how many times I've had a young man say, you know, my desire, my goal one day is to be qualified to serve the Lord as an elder in the church. You know, someone said one time, and at first it kind of took me back, but I see the point, I see some wisdom in it. There's a preacher that said, he says, what the Lord's church needs more of is more paid elders and less paid preachers. And at first that just kind of flew over me a little bit. And you gotta kind of back up and think about this a little bit. And I've seen the case where there are men who have been well qualified to serve as an elder and do so and do the best they can, getting a little bit older in age, still very busy working because they have to make a livelihood, and could be so much greater help and benefit to the church if they could have more time to do that. Seldom do you see a church that says to a man who's serving as an elder, you know, we wish you could spend more time at this. You know, if we could take up your support, if you could quit your job and just and serve this week. Sometimes you come across churches where that's happened. And there's and in every case I've seen of that, it's always been a tremendous blessing to the church. That doesn't take away from the place or need of evangelists. I'm not saying that. But our focus is if we can just get us a good preacher, this church will be okay. But really and truly, what the local church needs more than anything is spiritual leaders, spiritual shepherds. That's what a church needs. I'm not saying there's not the need of an evangelist. I'm just saying that for the bigger picture of the church, for the greater need of the church, to fully satisfy God's plan for the church, our focus has become kind of skewed. We've kind of swung over this way. We just get us a good preacher. Now, why can't we do more to try to encourage good elders and leadership in the church? And the point Zach is making about young men and young women who are of the mind that they want to grow and develop, they want to live a life such, raise a family such, where a man will be qualified to serve as an elder, you just don't hear that much. And I've seen the case a number of times. It's very painful. A man has grown some in maturity. He's working at becoming more useful to the church, is studying more and teaching more, and in many ways would be qualified to serve as a shepherd. But he can't, because earlier in life he was not so devoted to such things, and his family situation is just not what it needs to be. His children don't really have respect for him. They don't love the Lord, and he has not demonstrated that he can rule his house and bring his children to the Lord. How can he rule the church of God? I think that's what the apostle is saying there. You know, and so the point being, you're 50 or 60 years old, it's not the time to think. And I've heard men say, I'd like to make an elder someday. You know, they're 60 years old. Many situations their life is a mess, and it's like, well, I wish that could happen. But you step away thinking, it's too late. It's too late to prepare for that kind of service. And so young men, you know, considering, you know, getting married, we need to be teaching our young men and young women, you know, about the kind of mates they need to have to be able to aspire to these kinds of responsibilities. Because a man can be very apt and willing and able to serve, but if his family situation is not what it needs to be, if his wife is not a help to him in these things, he's not going to be able to serve. So there's all of these other elements here. And so, yeah, Satan has had a tremendous impact. I mean, just in the last couple of generations in this country, what's happened to the family? I mean, the family situation in our nation is pitiful at best. And if we think that that's not affected the overall outlook in the families within the Lord's church, we need to open our eyes. Things have changed. And it's one of the factors that's really hurting the church, having men qualified to be able to serve that. Good comments. Any other comments on those points? We have some other things we can see here too. Bless.
I was just thinking, if I was to say one factor that was probably more significant than any other that relates to not having elders, is probably individuals not being as Christ-centered in their whole lives as they can be or should be.
Yeah.
Notice our, if our allegiance, like every day, is not to Jesus, then that's what you're going to have. You're going to have a kind of, say, lukewarm, but a Christianity that seems to happen on Sunday, mm-hmm. Wednesday maybe, and not happen every single day.
Exactly.
If our allegiance to Christ only shows up on certain days, we're really not Christians. Mm-hmm.
For everyone.
Right.
Right.
So if that one thing affects everything else. If your allegiance, your loyalty is not to Jesus every day, then no, you're not going to develop men that are qualified for elders, because an elder has to have his heart, and every other member for that matter.
Sure.
I mean, has to have his heart solved towards Jesus all the time.
You know, if everyone would consider very carefully the characteristics of a man who would serve as an elder, or we haven't read, but a woman who would be an elder's wife or a deacon's wife, and live toward those kind of characteristics, in the end, we wouldn't have a problem finding men qualified to serve. I understand, look, there are circumstances that can happen in people's lives that would make one not fitting or able to serve, that they can't control. I understand that. But that is not the problem for the dramatic lack of leadership and elderships in churches. That's the exception. The rule is, I think, a whole lot more along the line of what Les is saying, that men have not lived their lives in such a way to make themselves qualified. That's the big picture part. Yeah.
Your comment about it somewhat waiting too long to decide one. That's certainly true, but it's also okay to have made some mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Peter refers to himself as a fellow elder.
Right.
He turned his back on
absolutely.
And I think some men feel that they can't do it because some mistakes they've made in the past. Well, we've all made mistakes, and some congregations won't allow somebody to do it because they remember
way back
when they was young.
That's a good point. I heard one time a brother say, well, of course, one of the qualifications of being an elder is temperance, self-control. Well, I can never agree to so-and-so, being an elder, because I saw him lose his temper, some incident that happened way on back, And why is it, is that his characteristic now? Is that his quality that stands out now? Well, no, but I saw it then. Okay, I understand you saw it then. Let me tell you some things I've done in my life, or maybe let's not. All of us have done things we wished we hadn't. All of us have acted out in times in ways that we shouldn't have. Well, so did Paul. So did Peter. And so did some other Bible characters that we've grown to love and understand them for their faith, because they were changed by the gospel and they grew in such a way where godly characteristics became the norm for them. Isn't that what we're looking for in a man who is matured to the point to carry the qualifications to serve the church as a shepherd? They've grown and maybe have grown because of some of the stupid mistakes they made in the past. I wonder sometimes what Peter, did Peter ever forgive himself? You almost wonder, for some things that he did. Surely he did.
Discussing the youth, trying to get them to desire the position, I remember thinking that be careful about wanting to do it because it would sound prideful.
letting you serve is not being prideful. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're wanting to do it because of the authority and mm-hmm. the power hungry, yeah. it's a problem.
Right,
if
right.
That's something where a person has to look at their own, and be completely honest with their own reasons for doing it.
Right.
And if the reasons are right, then it's not for pride, it's not for power, it's for love. And there's nothing wrong with that. So there's where doing the self-analysis is hard, very hard for a young person.
That's a good point. James?
Well, if we look at what the Bible itself has said about the Corinthians, some of the things that they had done before they were converted, if you look at that, they had to choose elders from men who once were those kind of Corinthians, and they made changes.
That's a good point. Yeah, once were some of you, when Paul reminded them that there were adulterers and fornicators, homosexuals, drunkards, among you, such were some of you, but now you've been washed, you've been sanctified. Yeah, they were some lot, weren't they? What about us? I don't think we're better now. Let's think about who we are. All right, I thought we had our hands somewhere. No. All right, good thoughts. Good comments on that. So, I mean, what we're seeing and we're understanding here was God's plan. Every church would be served by elders and led by elders. And we can understand just briefly some things about the qualities, the qualifications of such. And then the reason why we're spending some time with this in, you know, a study of church history is because what happens, even by the second century, we start seeing some differences in the way elders or the eldership is looked at or as it is viewed. You know, in our book, this is on your page 19, some of these points right here that are being made. You have to spend a minute talking about elders, presbyters, bishops, overseers, shepherds, pastors. Okay, six different English words that are used to describe, I believe is describing the same role, the same office that we find in the New Testament. And that becomes a little bit confusing sometimes. Not so much confusing when you read the passages in Scripture, but confusing because of the way those same words are used today. That's what makes it a little more different. You know, there's a church today, Presbyterian Church, that is led by its presbyters or elders that would their presbyters would not in any way meet the qualifications that we've just read about here. And yet that's what they call them, their elders or their presbyters. You know, the word bishop is one that carries a very different meaning in the minds of many religious folks today than what we can see in the Bible and how that word is used. If I say, here's someone, you know, in the world sense, here's a church bishop, what do we think of? What comes to mind? Catholic Church? Methodist, perhaps? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, some of the Protestant religions today might have someone they call a bishop in some position or role. Probably in Catholicism, most prevalent, you know, they're bishops. Don't have too many of them out there that have office of overseer or called overseers. Shepherds or pastors. We think when you a pastor. What's a pastor in the mind of the world?
Preacher.
Yeah, preacher. I cannot tell you how many times I'm called pastor. You know, by people in the world. Well, you're a pastor of a church. I used to always try to engage them. Well, I'm not really a pastor. You start talking about things that just goes right over there. They don't get it. Okay? And so I've learned that now is not the best time to engage in a discussion about what is a scriptural pastor. Okay? You know, I said, well, yeah, I preach for a church over in East Nashville. You know, I just try to go that direction, try to introduce them to the church in some way. But I mean, we understand that's the way the world, you know, would kind of use it. Their preacher is their pastor, you know, or something like that. And so there are actually three Greek words used in Scripture that I think is talking about the same role of church leadership, elders. Three Greek words. It's translated into six different English words just to make it more confusing for us. But these words actually help to define the role of what an elder would be or what elders do. Acts chapter 20 to me is the best place to go, because if you look with me, we've been here already, I know. But Acts chapter 20, you know, in two or three verses, we find all three of the Greek words used, speaking about the same people, the same roles and responsibilities. And it's a place that we can see and understand that all of these different terms that are used is speaking about in Scripture about the same people, the same role. Acts chapter 20, verse 17, we read a few minutes ago. And from Miletus he sent to Ephesus and called for the elders of the church. That's the Greek word, presbyteros, elders, or presbyters of the church. Well, they came to Paul. When you read through chapter 20, it's in the verses following, just after that, where he is speaking to them. Here was the message that he had for them. In verse 28, it says, therefore take heed to yourselves and to all the flock over which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers to shepherd the church of God. That second Greek word is being used. You know, speaking about, you know, the same people. We have, we actually have two, the second and third Greek word that is used there. All three Greek words are used in the form of elders, overseers, and shepherds. Speaking of the same people. Now, if we think about elders, overseers, shepherds, just looking at that passage right there, what are some thoughts or some conclusions that we start to pull and start to draw regarding the responsibility, their role? What are some things that would come to mind? Their qualifications, even. Okay, it's not meant to be hard.
They would have to be familiar with their flock so they can be effective in guiding.
Shepherds know their flock. Jesus made that point very well. The flock knows them. We see, we can understand that response. Watch over them. Watch that. We see that responsibility of shepherds that way. Bless.
Well, I was going to say something similar, but the illustration really is being given of a shepherd. Mm-hmm. You know, a shepherd leads the sheep to green pastures and, you know, does all, protects the sheep, watches over the sheep. So that's really seems to be the most prevalent, like, easy illustration that you can think of that is biblical, that defines what a shepherd is.
And I get that.
The chief shepherd.
Yeah.
The chief shepherd, right, is Jesus.
Yeah, which goes back to Neil's point again. An elder or shepherd is a leader among that flock, and he's still a follower, as we are all, and trying to lead others to be followers of the chief shepherd. That's my point. It's on the other hand somewhere.
And sacrifices himself for the flock.
Willing to sacrifice himself, protect the flock, whatever the cost. Yeah. Right? So you see, the different terms that are used in and of itself helps us to get a broader picture and deeper picture of what the responsibility of the elders would be. And so we don't see a distinction then between the bishops and the overseers. They're the same. We don't see a distinction between bishops and elders or presbyters. We don't see a distinction between the elders or pastors, or the shepherds and the pastor. It's all speaking about the same office, the same responsibility. And we're thinking, us and we're going, we know that, we get that. Hey, it becomes a critical point in just the next century, you know, when distinctions start to be made. Distinctions that the Lord has not made on these things. Okay. So let's see. I think we... another point I had, I put on the overhead. Again, no distinction in rank. We mentioned that sort of, just a point of emphasis. There was not an elder that was over the other elders. And really it seems very soon after, looking at secular history, it would have to tell us this, it goes beyond what the Bible tells us. Not long after that first century, we start seeing glimpses in recorded history about, like, presiding elders. That is, that a church would have an eldership, but there was one elder that was sort of the chairman of the board, so to speak. Now, there was one that had authority over the others. And, you know, you wonder sometimes how something like that gets started. I mean, could something like that get started even in, you know, an innocent way? I mean, I think it could. Anyone have any questions? Just call this out. You know, I was in a meeting with some elders one time several years ago, and four or five of them, I forget. And Brother so-and-so was going to lead chair of this meeting. And they made the point to make this distinction. I thought this was interesting, and I appreciate it. They said, we just want you to know that, you know, Brother so-and-so doesn't always, you know, lead the meeting. We take turns every time. It happens to be his turn this time. And I kind of presumed that. They didn't have to tell me that. But I kind of appreciated they did. You know, they were just wanting to make sure that I understood that one was not above the other among the eldership there. But I can almost see how something, you know, in an innocent way could get started and it leads to something that's not right, not good.
Yeah, I was thinking that, but how easy it is to say, it's easy to look and say, well, that man's already been an elder for this long. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's got more experience, and to always put it off on somebody. But then being willing to do that, you know, to allow someone to always take that responsibility or make the decisions or lead, and you not being just as much of a leadership, what is that saying about you with your desire to be an elder? And, you know what I'm saying?
One time, there was a church I know of that had an eldership, and they had appointed two or three more men that were going to be serving as well. And somebody had kind of made the comment, maybe in jest, you know, now we have some elders in learning, you know, because they're the new elders coming in. And one of the elders quickly, kindly, made a correction to that. These men have already distinguished themselves. These men have already proven their character and their characteristics, their qualities to be able to serve. And so when they come into this existing eldership, they don't have to prove anything to those who are elders. They've already distinguished themselves to the church to have these qualifications. And so now all of us are working together as shepherds. And that was an interesting point to me too. That was well stated, you know. But sometimes isn't that our impression? New elders come in, and so they're not as good as the old ones. But wait a minute, we need to be really careful about it. I understand experience means something. Okay, I'm not saying that doesn't come into account. But if they're qualified to serve as elders, they've already distinguished their ability to serve in that role. That's it. Real quick, Neil.
I'm just thinking the tendency of wanting to acquiesce or to bow to someone superior knowledge or superior experience, by all means, listen to it.
Yeah.
But still, run it through the filter of the Bible.
Absolutely. And a good eldership would always do that. Good points. Good comments. Lord willing, Wednesday night. The bottom of page 19 is where we're taking off that. Evidence of departure from the New Testament pattern. We have focused in this class about the New Testament pattern for leadership, for the eldership of the church. As we've already discussed, that's where the first digressions take place, is within the eldership. We'll take up there Wednesday night, bottom of page 19.